This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Christy Landwehr from yet again snowing Aurora, Colorado. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on Horse Radio Network for April the 19th, episode 1409. This episode is brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association. Good morning, horse world.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Here's a safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Missed it by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Tuesday morning. And of course, Christy is with us the third Tuesday of every month and has been for a long time now. Thank you so much, Christy, for stopping by.
Absolutely. I love my Tuesday mornings with Glenn and Jen.
I know. It's fun. I look forward to it every single month. And are you in Colorado or are you traveling now?
I am in Colorado and it's snowing again. It's like the winter that never ends. It looks like Christmas outside right now, and it's April.
Yeah, I don't know why you live there.
Because I can ski and do other cool stuff.
Yeah, and it is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. I mean, there's that little thing. As long as you like snow.
True.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by the Certified Horsemanship Association. They've been with us for a long time. We really appreciate that. If you missed past episodes and training episodes that we've done here, you can head over to horsesinthemorning.com and do a search for Certified Horsemanship, and it'll pop up all of those episodes. You can go back and listen to them on the website. But Jennifer, we got a lot going on today's show, so let's get right to Jennifer and find out what is going on today's show.
On today's Certified Horsemanship Association Tuesday edition, summer camp is right around the corner. So we have a trio of guests to help us find a great camp or summer lesson program for ourselves or our kids. First up is Roxanne Lawrence, the CEO from the Interscholastic Equestrian Association, followed in closely by Peggy Adams from the CHA Clinic staff team and CHA Clinic instructor Amy Canterbury. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. That's kind of cool. We haven't talked about camps in a while, so that'll be fun. And I had a couple of things I wanted to mention here before we get on with the show. A couple of odd things, but I am a geek, so I feel responsibility to help keep all of our listeners safe. And if you haven't heard, the Department of Homeland Security and top cybersecurity firms had advised that Windows PC users, if you're doing any Windows PC, whether it's 7 or 10 or whatever, to uninstall Apple's QuickTime video player. Just go to your Windows search, the bottom left there, and search for QuickTime. If it's in there, go into your control panel and uninstall QuickTime. It is not secure, and major bugs were found in the software. Apple has announced that they are not updating QuickTime for Windows anymore. It's kind of Apple's way of sticking Windows in the back. And I don't know that I've ever seen a Homeland Security announcement encouraging everybody, all Americans, to uninstall a program. So I don't know if you'd heard about that, Christy, but I thought I'd mention it to everybody.
No, and now it makes me wonder if my computer has it and halfway through this live show, if it's just going to like go crazy.
I don't think so, but you want to get it done. We actually checked. Of course, we have a lot of computers here. We actually checked and about half our computers had it. So definitely check today and get that uninstalled. Also, a very exciting announcement in the world of podcasting. is you have a new way now. Like, there's not enough ways to listen to our show. There's another one. Google Play Music, which if you have an Android phone, you have on your phone, already gives you the right kind of music. You can listen to all different kinds of music on there. But now it's, as of yesterday, added podcasts. So it's rolling. It's on the web right now. So if you go, you search Google Play Music on the web and you go there and look at it, there's a podcasts link at the top, a button. You can choose podcasts and you can go in and search for like Horses in the Morning or any of our shows. They're on there. I submitted them and they were all approved. So you can listen on there. It's kind of a neat interface. It works very well. And then they're going to be rolling it out to iOS and Android phones over the next couple of weeks. So you'll see it update here at some point. And you go into Google Music app on your phone, which, as I said, if you have Android, should be on there already. And you'll find a podcast section, and we're in there too. And the nice part is, like on iTunes, you can subscribe to whichever podcast you like and make your own playlist, and it will download the shows and everything for you. So it's an alternative. You know, of course, we have our app. We've had over 25,000 people download that. But we, you know, if you like listening to multiple podcasts, then sometimes a player is in order, and this one's already built in. So we're very excited that Google has figured out that podcasting is worthwhile.
That is so great. See, I'm learning all kinds of things on today's show.
Now, unfortunately, they have not seen fit to put Horses in the Morning on the homepage, like one of the premier shows that they have launched with. For some reason, we did not make the cut. But
there is always the future.
Maybe someday they'll recognize the fact that there's a lot of horse people. Maybe
they will
someday.
There's hope.
Someday. I keep hoping that we're going to make a list somewhere, sometime, but haven't yet. All right. We'll get mainstream. Horses will get mainstream at some point. Well, so we're talking today about really how people start riding. A lot of people get their first rides at camp, right?
They do. And, you know, telling you, trying to get horses mainstream, a lot of people's first rides are not as successful as other people's first rides.
That's true.
So sometimes you go down the path of, I'm going to pick a different sport and I'm just going to do a plug really quick. That's why you want to go find somebody to ride with that's good and can teach you and help you and make you knowledgeable.
But you know what, I have to say though that a lot of things you try the first time. My first time snow skiing and water skiing were disasters.
So, I agree.
You know, it's not just horses.
And you know what? It's a really good thing if your first time rock climbing is unsuccessful. You hope that the ropes and the carabiners hold you in place. So it kind of depends on what you're doing for the first time.
And there's a reason that, you know, when you start learning to ride a bike, you have training wheels. You know, there's a reason.
Yeah, there is. Don't you wish we had those on horses? We could get like big, gigantic inflatable balls and stick them on the side of the horse. Then if we fall off, we fall on those.
Yes.
And it would be like bumper ponies or something. It would be good.
We've often talked about the bubble wrap suit.
Yes.
You know, we're getting close to that with the inflatable air vests. We are kind of getting close to a bubble wrap suit with those.
That is true. I just would not want it to accidentally inflate when I didn't want it to. That would be my problem.
That happens all the time.
Yeah.
People hop off.
I'm still a little afraid of those. I'll have to do more crash test dummying with other people with really broke horses before I try that on
We had that conversation. Eventers should practice that, actually, because, you know, you don't want that at the show for the first time when you jump off and it pops and your horse freaks out. You don't want that happening at the show for the first time.
No, that could be very, very, very exciting.
Yes. Yes.
So I want to know from both of you, Jen and Glenn, what were your very first experiences on a horse?
Oh, Jennifer, I have to answer that one first because she rode from the time she was teeny.
Some of the earliest ones I have are me getting chucked off. One of my favorites is, and this is a lesson, don't buy an ex racing pony for your small children. We got a little pony that we didn't realize it at the time, but he was, before we got him, a sulky racing pony. So he was a trotter and he could trot really, really fast. And none of us knew how to ride, had never had a riding lesson. We were lucky we got the tack on. And I distinctly remember getting him down the country road a little ways, and he decided it was time to go back home. So he trotted at a good minute and 7/8 clip back to the barn. And when he got to the barnyard fence was just one rail. That tells you what kind of place we had. It was just one rail, and it was a little taller than the pony. So he kept right on going under the rail at a full tilt trot and left me behind. So I got peeled off like a banana peel.
Oh.
But I got up, scuffed myself off, and got back on the pony, and off I went again.
And said, and here we go. See, so you were not one of the casualties of we don't want to do this sport. You said, sure, no problem. This is all right.
Sure. It wasn't any worse than getting beat up on by my big brothers. So I said, oh, heck with it. Let's just get back on and do it again.
That's right. No big deal. Well, I'm going to jump in here, Glenn, because it's so funny. We didn't talk about our first experiences prior to doing the show today. And yours is so similar to mine. It actually cracks me up. My parents had a friend who had a black Shetland pony named Sugar. And we were going to go ride Sugar. And I was six and I didn't know how to ride. And so we get up there on this little Western saddle and, you know, the whole, let's just go do this thing. So we're in kind of an arena-ish kind of thing with sloping rails and kind of, sort of. And Sugar decided after a little bit of walking around, Sugar was done. I don't want to do this anymore with you, child. And so she just went right for the gate. And the gate was, like you said, very similar to your situation, one of those slatted fences. And she was short enough that she could just kind of duck right under that, but let lowest one, because the lowest one was missing. So it was actually the second one. And
oh,
so the wood hits
was.
Me on the chest and I go flailing backwards and I'm laying there looking up. And my dad comes up to me, he goes, what's up with that? And I go, I think I fell off. He goes, well, get back on. And he picked me up and put me back on the pony. And we did a little bit more and that was that. And so, yep. So there you go. See, we are very hard pressed to, if we get fallen off the very first time, we don't care, do we, Jen? We just keep on going on.
Nope. Just get back on.
That's right.
You know, I think that's what determines who's going to become a horse girl. You know, if you go, I'm not doing that again, then you're not a horse girl, right? If the ones who get back on, they're going to be horse girls. Unfortunately, thanks to my illness, that a lot of the time of my life that was meeting Jennifer and in that period was a little fuzzy, but she did remind me, and now I remember, that my first ride was on Tar Baby, which was a horse that came with the farm. It was like one of those buy the farm, get the horse with it.
Buy one, get one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, buy one, get one.
So it was her uncle's horse, technically. And he was a Tennessee walking horse, a black one. And that was the first horse I ever rode. And you know what? I was scared to death because I had never, before I met Jennifer, horses were just something that got in my way. I lived in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. There were a lot of horse and buggies everywhere. So, you know, there was somebody, you know, you just always had to pass them. That's all I knew about horses is the Amish had them. And they all went fast. That's what I knew. So we, because, you know, the Amish don't drive their horses slow. So we did, you know, the first trail ride. I think it was, I don't know how long I had dated you before you made me get on a horse. Do you remember that?
Not very long. Not very long.
No,
at
I think
all.
That was a test to see if I would actually
of
get on a horse.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
Of course.
And then she put me on this Tennessee walking horse who was sweet as pie and took care of you and was smooth as could be. So the first time I actually rode a horse that, you know, wasn't a Tennessee walking horse, I was shocked. I was like, why do people do this when there's that? You know? You know, when you have a Tennessee walking horse and you start with that and you go back the other way, it's like, what? Post? What? Who do you? What? It's not comfortable in any way, shape, or form. So that's why
and
I went to carriage driving. It was more
driver.
Like,
yeah, yes.
That's right. It's more like riding a Tennessee walking horse, smooth, you know?
Don't have to post in the cart, do you, Glenn?
No, and I don't know that I've ever ridden a horse that's cantered. I really don't know that I've ever ridden a cantering horse because with the Tennessee walking horse, we just did our Tennessee walking thing and kept up. So I actually don't think I've ever cantered a horse. And you know what? I don't really have a need to. I don't have any desire.
I think Jen has a new goal.
No, she really doesn't want to do that either. Yeah, the other thing we tried was taking lessons. I tried taking lessons with my wife. And that just doesn't work. Very few couples can make that work. Then I actually did take some lessons when we had one of the Percherons. I took some lessons with one of the working students, and that worked much better than with my wife. So, you know, there's just something about your wife telling you what to do that doesn't always work.
Or as my boys would say, your mother.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's the same dynamic, isn't it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Especially with boys. I mean, absolutely. Girls, too. I mean, girls have that relationship with their mother, too. So I don't know. Just somebody, it shouldn't be a relative teaching you riding.
That's all right. We've certified 25,000 of them. They can go find one of us. It's really okay.
Jennifer, post on Facebook. Let's make that the question of the day. Who was your first horse or pony that you ever rode, your first ride, and how successful was it? Let's put that as the question of the day on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page. We want to hear from our listeners. And at the end of the show, we'll read a couple. So we'll do that today. All right. We are going to be heading to our first guest shortly. Jennifer's getting them set up. But tell me, you have many clinics and things coming up around the country, right?
We do. This is our really, really busy time of year. A lot of people are trying to get certified before the busy summer season hits. And, you know, ironically enough, as a mom now of boys that like to go to camp and do fun things during the summer, this is the time when you start looking for summer camp, whether it's a day camp or an overnight camp or a whole week camp. And I found out some camps are a whole month. And I don't know if I'd want to be away from my children that long just yet, maybe when they're older. But right now, I still like them enough that a week's good enough. But I was fascinated. There's so many different ones. And of course, some have riding, some don't, and what have you. So we thought it would be a good time to talk about that. But we have about, I would say we're up to 60-something clinics now listed on our website for those that want to get certified, either as an instructor or a equine facility manager. So go and check out chainstructors.com, go to clinics by location or date, and they'll all come up.
All right, very good. And also, you're on a little bit of a push right now.
Facebook post. We are so close, Glenn. We are so close. We're almost at that lovely 10,000 mark. You know, when Facebook changed its algorithm, we were close to the 10,000 mark back then, and then it changed its algorithm and we lost some people, right? It was pretty funny. So now we're close again. So this time it's, I guess, for reals, unless they change their algorithm again. But I think we're literally like 30 people away. So those that are listening, I would really like it if you'd go like Certified Horsemanship Association, then you can play on the Facebook page with us. We put lots of fun things up there, as well as educational and informational things. We link a lot to our media partners, like Horses in the Morning and, you know, all the AIM magazines and Horse Illustrated and what have you. So we would love it if you would come and join our Facebook page.
Very good. Well, your guest is ready.
Wonderful. I'm so excited to introduce Roxanne Lawrence. She is the Chief Executive Officer for the Interscholastic Equestrian Association, and IEA is growing like crazy. And when we're talking about first experiences on a horse, for many of Roxanne's members, sometimes that includes joining an IEA team because of how the structure works, which I'll let her explain. But I'll be seeing her starting tomorrow in Kentucky because they're having their nationals. And she's also on the board of directors for the American Youth Horse Council that's also having an event this week in Kentucky. So we get a twofer. So I love to introduce Roxanne today. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad the phone calls all worked together. I had a bad dream last night that I missed your call. So I'm really glad that we're all on the radio now.
Oh, you know, people have had nightmares about our show for other reasons, so why not?
Yeah. So, yeah, we're here. We're moving into Lexington. I'm calling you from the rolling, beautiful hills of Lexington, Kentucky. We've got two events going on. I'm involved in the two events, and Christy, we'll see you here this weekend, too. The main event here is the Interscholastic Equestrian Association National Finals, and we're here in the All-Tech Arena, which is a beautiful indoor coliseum. And we start showing tomorrow. We've got a five-day horse show, and our organization offers hunt seat and western riding in a draw-based format, so it's a direct feeder to the intercollegiate program. And we're offering riding for students in grades 6 through 12. So our program here was particularly exciting for us this year as we are doing a joint hunt seat and Western National Finals. Most year, the events are separate with hunt seat usually in April and Western in June. But every few years, we like to bring the two disciplines together and just have, you know, this giant extravaganza. So this is our year for the big extravaganza, and we have hunt seat and Western, 5 days of showing. We have a speaker symposium that'll go on throughout the week as well. Christy's going to be part of that. We also have Bertie Traurig, Olympian Bertie Traurig, Grand Prix rider Candace King. We have representatives from the Pony Club and the Hunter Jumper Association, National Reining Horse Association. Bob Cascione from the Intercollegiate Association will be here. We have a great speaker symposium lineup that has topics for coaches, riders, parents, students, collegiates, all of that. And then we're partnering with the American Youth Horse Council. They are doing their symposium here in Lexington, and that will start on Friday, runs Friday through Sunday. And they start the weekend with Friday doing tours. They have several tours that do highlights around the Lexington area. They'll tour a racehorse farm, a veterinary clinic, training stables, and I think most of them are also going to a saddle horse farm. And that happens Friday. Friday evening, they're going into discussion groups about the equine industry in general. And then Saturday, there will be breakout sessions, different groups, again, specifically for coaches, youth leaders, young people, and college students. And they have several tracks there, and they'll do that in the morning. And they're going to come over and join us Saturday afternoon for lots of events here at the IEA. And then Sunday afternoon, they'll wrap up with more learning sessions over there at their symposium. So we have a lot going on between the two groups and a lot going on for the youth in the industry here in Lexington this weekend.
Well, Roxanne, our topic today is what was your first ride? And I bet through the organization that you run, IEA, because of the draw system, somebody doesn't have to own their own horse or lease their own horse or even have a horse of any kind. So a lot of times, maybe for some of your students that are in the beginner classes, it might be the very first time they ride a horse is on an IEA team. Would you think that that's true?
Certainly the first time they compete. Now, we do have a requirement that you have to have a year of instruction to compete in IEA because our lowest level does show at a walk, trot, and canter or walk, jog, load. So they will have ridden before they get to the IEA, but this is very likely to be their first competitive experience. And it's a really great way. It brings the accessibility to our sport. Now, it's one of our main missions is to make the sport, you know, so you're not held back if you can't own or buy a horse, that you actually can get in and compete and ride and show and qualify for a national final with top caliber prizes through the IEA. And it's been very successful. We're up to 12,500 members this year. We're in year 14 of our organization. And and I should probably go back too and say this year with the combined event too, we have just an unbelievable bunch of prizes from our sponsors, from National Reining Horse Association, from the Quarter Horse Association, AQHA, Dover Saddlery. We have a hunt seat saddle for every one of our individual winners of our classes. And our hunt seat side, an individual side, will win a saddle. We have certificates from Treadstep, Sam Shield, and Noble Outfitters. We have belt buckles donated from Rod's Western Palace. We have a lot of great stuff. So it's really cool that you can get in at the beginner level all the way up to the open level in the IEA without owning a horse and come to this kind of national finals event.
So how does somebody find a team near them if they want to get started?
Well, all the info is on our website. Our website is rideiea.org. And there's several ways to do it. You can look on the website and there's actually a map where you can say, oh, I live in Georgia. Let me click on Georgia. And it will show you every active team in the Georgia area with their contact information. So you can track down a team that's near you. Or if you want to start a new team yourself at your own barn, then you can, it has all the information on how to start your own team. And we have an awesome membership staff that is very helpful if you need help navigating the website or finding the membership materials or any questions you have along the way. They are happy to help. And all the contact information for our membership office is on our website also.
And how does somebody find out more about the American Youth Horse Council and see if they want to be part of that event or future events that they do?
On their website as well. They have all of their information on the AYHC, American Youth Horse Council website. And they are looking for more members to join. They're really focused. They're not a a discipline-specific group, so they encourage youth from all different disciplines And it's really about bringing people together for a general love and appreciation of horses, and not specifically that you're a hunt seat person or a saddle seat person or a Western person, but just, you know, the love of the horse in general and the things that all of us as horse lovers have in common and can learn from each other. It's a very good networking opportunity to get involved with that program.
I'm excited to go back to the symposium this year. I was on their board for 13 years. You would have thought they would have gotten sick of me, but I had different jobs during that time. So I kept bringing different things to the table. But
I thought you were going to say I kept breaking different things. That's what I thought you were going to say.
I was breaking plates while putting them on the table. Glenn, Roxanne knows me well. So we have stories about things like that, don't we, Roxanne? So yeah. So anyway,
yes,
I was on their board for
13 plates,
years.
Yeah.
Yes. And we now, CHA sponsors their Youth Leader of the Year program, and we actually provide monies for the winner to get a really nice belt buckle from AYHC. So I get to go and present that this year, and I get to be a part of it again, and I haven't been there for a while, so I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah, there's a lot going on. We're going to keep Christy busy, too. As soon as she gets here, we're going to line her up. In addition to her speaking stuff, we got jobs for her, too.
No rest so for the weary.
We got some work for you to do tomorrow.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Well, Roxanne, thanks so much for being on today. And I'm looking forward to seeing you very soon. And thanks for sharing about these events going on in Lexington. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks so much for letting me be part of your show this morning. And we would welcome anyone who's anywhere near the Lexington, Kentucky area to come by and visit us over the next 5 days. We're going to be having a great time.
Roxanne, you're a week early. You could have done the week and then ended with Rolex.
Right. We actually looked at that idea, but it seemed like maybe the parking was going to be a little.
Yeah,
tight,
yeah.
So.
Like in the next county.
Come for 3 weeks.
Like in the next county.
For 3 weeks, you can come for. You can come to our event, Rolex, and then the Intercollegiate Finals is the week after Rolex. So there's a lot going on here, as usual.
As usual, you know, and. The other thing too is I think during Rolex they're having a big concert at the indoor, so the indoor gets very expensive and crowded during that week.
There's a lot going on in this area for sure, and it's Keeneland Racing here too now, so there's plenty to do.
Oh, that's right, racing's going on right now too. And that'll be over. That usually ends Rolex week, if I remember right. But
they run out of space for everybody.
You guys have the best stadium to do this in. I mean, we were there for Road to the Horse, and I've been there many, many times. We had the radio show for the WEG in 2010, so I spent a lot of hours in that stadium. And it's just the nicest stadium because, one, the barns are right there, and they're really nice. It's so well set up for spectators. There's not a bad seat in the house. And for riders, it's really good footing. It's just nice.
It is. And for our riders, just the thrill of walking in and getting to compete in an arena like this. It gives me chills to even think about it, that we've brought this to a group of youth who might not even be able to ride without our organization. So that's very rewarding.
Well, I'm curious to know, and I don't know if you have statistics on this. I'm sure you do. What percentage of the riders you have on teams then go on to continue riding, and what percentage never ride again? Do you know?
Oh gosh, I'm not sure I have the exact stats on that, but gosh, almost all of our riders continue riding in one way or another, and most of them will go on to ride on a college team at least.
Right.
It's just, if they like this format and they're comfortable in this format and they enjoy this, they're doing it because they want to ride in college. So
right.
We're seeing, a high, in the 90% of the kids that come through our program are at least continuing on to the college level.
Well, very cool. That's really neat. Well, good job, and have fun there at the Kentucky Horse Park.
Thanks. We will. Thanks very much.
All right. Take care.
Thanks.
Now, with the Collegiate Association and then the High School Association, it is kind of like they're riding for the first time every time because they get different
horses every time. That's true, because they draw the horse. Yeah, you got it. Right. And there's something about that. I think we're making real horsemen and women with this type of a program because, you know, you can say you're a really good rider and ride your one horse all the time, but then you get on a different horse and you go, oh, the buttons are a little different. And all of a sudden it changes some. So I think a program with a draw program where you're riding horse after horse after horse, it kind of makes you a good rider because the buttons are not necessarily always the same.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's good.
That's why the Pony Club during their testing makes them switch horses is because of that. You know, you do need to do that. But you're right about the intercollegiate riders because and the interscholastic riders, you know, they're going to be more well-rounded because they've ridden more horses.
Well, and we love IEA because Roxanne has her membership director is Jen Eaton, and she sits on our board of directors. And we don't pay our board members anything. We don't reimburse for travel. We don't do any of that. So it's really nice when the organization believes in what we're doing enough in our partnership that they want to go ahead and provide a wonderful board member. And we love having Jen on our board. So that was good to have Roxanne on this morning to share with us all about IEA.
I have one more question. What percentage of the kids at high school level like that, what percentage are girls and boys? Is it still 99% girls?
You know, it is still quite high on the girl side, and I'm sure I'll find out more this week, but I would say you're looking at 85-15, probably at the best odds.
And again, I'm going to say it over and over and over again. If only I had known to be one of the 15 back in school. So dumb.
You ended up all right.
We all play football and, you know, all of those sports where there's no girls. And I could have been like one guy in 15 girls.
I know.
If only I had known.
I keep trying to tell my boys that, and they just say, Mommy, girls are gross. We don't want to be around them right now. All right, I'll wait another few years. I'm just starting that mantra too early.
Exactly. Let's wait till they're at least six or seven. You know,
there you go. Right.
5-year-old boys really don't know. Yours are older than that. I know that.
I know, but still, very fun.
All right, Peggy is ready.
All right. Well, I am thrilled to introduce Peggy Adams. She is a lifelong horse lover who recently retired from teaching and coaching. She had her own farm called Play Horse Play. And prior to that, she worked almost 30 years in the Girl Scout organizations in a variety of managerial positions up at the top there in Georgia. She was instrumental in starting three large year-round equine programs that included fundraising, design, and construction of the actual facilities. And she is a clinician for us, so she trains the instructor. And she's also, Glenn, my boss, because she's the current president of CHA, so please be nice to her. Hi, Peggy. How are you today?
Good morning, Christy and Glenn. How are you guys?
Good. So you're the boss, huh?
Well, you know, I like to look at it as, you know, I am just an encourager of a very competent employee. How's that?
Oh, geez, I was hoping for some dirt. I was really hoping for the good stuff.
Well, now, Glenn, if you want the dirt, we'll have to do that offline, okay?
You know, what's funny is she warned me before the show, too, that you were the boss, and I said that. And she also said, well, you're going to have to do that after the show. We can't do that during the show.
See, Christy and I are usually on the same page.
It's a good thing.
How's everything in Georgia today, Peggy? I bet you don't have white stuff coming down like I do.
Well, I was going to tell you, Christy, I really hate that you're having snow because it is upper 80s, sunny, and drop-dead gorgeous here in Georgia.
Ah, jealous.
I know.
Yeah, perfect. We're all a little done. Yeah, I'll tell you, my horses are like hovered underneath their shelter going, really? This has still come down? And what's funny about it is that I was starting to think all three of my horses had Cushing's because I'm like, why are they not shedding out? Because we had these wonderful 70-degree weeks and it's like, this is why they're not shedding out. They know. They know we still have this winter.
Too bad horses. I wish horses could write an almanac. Then we would know when it was time to put the blankets away because they would tell us.
Yes, that's true. Because they're better than the Farmer's Almanac. They definitely have that barometric pressure thing down. So Jen, Glenn, and I, Peggy, were talking earlier about our very, very first riding experience, and we would like to hear yours, please.
Well, you know, it was funny. I was listening to you guys thinking, why is it that so many people's first experience ends up with some kind of lifelong story? You know, when you ask people, have they ever ridden a horse? There's always a story. And I just kind of laugh about that because when you get new students, you get the same thing from the parents. They'll say, oh, when I was a kid, you know, the horse ran me under the tree or whatever. So I have one of those stories that doesn't end in having to jump over barbed wire or catch the tree.
Peggy, before you continue,
running you under it.
Before you continue, Peggy, but isn't that true of everybody you meet? Once they learn you're in horses, they tell the one time they rode story. Non-horse,
yes,
everybody
do.
Does.
It is so funny.
Yeah, that's right.
It and is they so all, funny.
And they all say, and do you know Charlie? He lives in Ocala and he has horses because they believe that we all know each other. You know?
Right, exactly. Or that we all rode the same horse or pony
exactly.
for our first experience.
There's only like 12 horses
and
in the country.
Always,
we all rode it.
And they're all named Sugar and Honey and Spice and stuff
Sorry,
like that, right?
Go ahead.
Well, you know, the funny thing about my first experience is I had an uncle who had a farm, and they just kept a couple of retired horses out in the field. And my aunt was super horsey. Well, as a young child, all I could say was horse, 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 pony, pony, pony. But we didn't get to visit these relatives all that often. But when I was 5, we were at the family farm, and my aunt decided that I was finally old enough to take a little horsey ride with her. And she had an old pony, and she saddled him up, and we went on a little trail ride. And she actually ponied me on that trail ride. So the little pony was beside her quarter horse. And my first experience was on a trail ride as a 5-year-old. And it was super awesome because even though she was giving me the tools to steer and stop and stuff like that, she really did kind of control my pony so that it wouldn't run me up under the tree. So I had a great first experience. So I love to tell people that when they tell me their little drama stories about their first ride.
I like yours much better than mine.
I'm jealous.
You didn't get dirty at all.
No. And it was on the trail instead of in the arena.
That's
right.
Yes, that was super fun.
Well, I'll tell you, and you know, this is one thing that it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. And I know that it's a matter of trying to let folks know that there are alternatives to the, oh, my neighbor up the road has a horse. Why don't you go try to get on it for your first experience? Things like a riding camp, whether it's a day camp or an overnight camp that have, you know, good quality horses, good quality counselors that can help you, whether it's taking a riding lesson your first time getting on a horse actually from somebody who knows who also has good horses and what have you. So I know, Peggy, you've done so much in your background in regards to camping and lessons. What do you personally like about a very first experience for a child? What do you think is a really good idea?
Well, I think the most important thing is for parents to determine what the child's goals are. So, for example, is this new rider someone who just thinks horses are majestic and they're beautiful and they love animals? Or have they been, you know, wanting to get on the horse at Walmart, you know, every time they go by there since they were 2? So if, you know, if the rider is, the future rider is somebody that is super, super, super into horses, then a parent might want to introduce their rider to either a camp or a lesson program that does private lessons or has small group lessons that they can participate in. Versus the other type of new rider might just want to have their first experience in a camp environment where there are lots of other activities going on as well. So, for example, many camps provide helmets, boots, etc. for those one-week experiences so that parents don't have to spend a lot of money up front just in case they're new rider doesn't really like it, or they think that horse is awfully big and that sort of thing. So camps can be super helpful to parents when they're trying to navigate, does my child really, really, really like horses? The other neat thing about the camp environment for first-time riders is that they can go to a camp with a friend, and the friend, you know, may help it be a little bit easier for a nervous rider. You know, sometimes when you do things with a friend, it goes down a lot easier than if you're trying something for the first time on your own. So camps can be super great for that first-time rider who's not necessarily sure they're going to like it. They just want that first experience.
I agree. And I'll tell you, my boys are now at that age where they want to do camps and they want to do kind of the overnight and the week long. And there are so many choices, especially out here in Colorado. And then, of course, in this day and age, you don't have to have camp just within your own state. You can put them on an airplane. On Southwest, they have to be six. That's pretty crazy. You put them on an airplane unaccompanied and let's send them across country to do whatever they need to do. So there's all kinds of choices now. What are some things that you think parents should look for in regards to the camp as a whole, and then specifically in regards to their horse program?
Well, for the camp as a whole, I think parents should, you know, like everything they do, is do a little due diligence and find out a little bit about the camp, investigate the camp, review their website, make phone calls to people that they may know who have attended the camp. I think there's so much information available to parents when they're looking to choose the right camp now, that information is so readily available that it's easy for them to determine if it's right for them. So here are a couple of examples. So if I'm trying to decide for my child which camp she might want to go to, one of the first things I might determine is what kinds of activities are being offered. So for example, is it 100% horses all the time, or is it a camp that has a large variety of activities that my child might be able to participate in? And once I determine the kind of program my child might be interested in participating in, then I would like to make a phone call to the camp and ask just some basic questions. You know, how long has the camp been in business? How long has the camp director been there? Where do they hire their camp staff from? Do they use camp staff that come from other countries? How does that process work? Just a ton of questions to make me feel better as a parent in sending my child to that camp. You know how sometimes you can get an icky feeling when you talk to someone that you don't perceive when you read the glossy, beautiful website? You know what
yes.
I'm talking about? That little icky
Absolutely.
Feeling or that little voice in your stomach? So
well, you know
I think
what?
Any parent.
I think that, Peggy, that goes along
go
with, we always say that if you're an experienced horse person, you walk in a barn, anybody's barn, whether you're going to look at a horse or you're just visiting someplace, every barn has a feel. You can tell what the atmosphere is in that barn just by walking in and, the horses and the people, it just all gives you a feel immediately, right? It's instant judgment.
Yes.
And we all do it. And I think that's the same way with camps, isn't it? I mean, you kind of go in and you go, okay, this has a good vibe to it.
That's exactly right. And Glenn, unfortunately, many parents are unable to physically go to the property before they send their child. So they may be sending their child to a camp that's 3 hours away, and they have to make those decisions without physically being on the property. So that's why I was suggesting that making a phone call to the camp itself and talking to personnel there, or to ask them to give the names of a couple of other families that would be willing to talk to you about their child's experience. Because it is not uncommon for parents to send their child away for the first time without seeing the camp themselves.
I think that's true. I had my boys went to Camp Idrahaji last year up in Bailey, Colorado. And the reason that they went there is because a good friend of mine's son was going, and he really wanted my son to room with him in the teepee because they stay in teepees. And so we did not see it ahead of time because it's quite the drive up there, and with busy schedules and whatever, we went 100% on the auspice of, well, Ashley should know better, right? She's a good mom and her kids have been going for years and everything's good. And I did
and
call
what
up.
What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, well, you know, we did. We just kind of throw them to the wolves a little bit. Just say, okay, let's do this. Well,
time
it ended up being
up.
Fine. They loved their 7 days. They thought it was great. But yes, I would agree that not all parents make that effort or can't make that effort to go and see it or feel comfortable not doing so. Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the good things is that the good camps have great reputations. The camps that aren't so great, you find out about them pretty quick if you do just a little bit of homework. And I'm not talking about the parent who sends their child to camp for the first time and maybe it's an overnight camp and they're terribly homesick. That's not necessarily a poor quality camp. It's an adjustment problem for that particular child at that particular time. So I think, phrasing the questions related to how the camp is run and, What kind of qualifications do those horseback riding instructors have? Are they certified? What about the ropes course or the swimming pool? You know, are there lifeguards? Those kinds of questions that parents assume are going to be the answer is yes. But I would just, you know, say to the parent out there thinking about going to either a week-long away camp or a camp at a local barn, that it truly is important to ask some of those basic questions. Don't assume that because they have camp at the end of their name, that that means they're going to meet all of those, what I would say parents assume that they're going to have those qualifications. They don't always.
And you really want to know how high are the counselors all the time? Can you ask that question?
I don't know, Glenn. You might be able to say how old they are, but I don't know about...
I watch those movies. I watch those movies about camp. Yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes you can have some rip-roaring good times in camps, and there's nothing going on but bug juice, which, of course, most camp people know. That's Kool-Aid.
That's right. That's right.
And there's enough sugar in some of that Kool-Aid, but you are going to have a good time with that.
Right. Right. One of the other things about choosing a camp I think that's important for parents is if you are choosing one of the camps that's 100% horses, that a lot of times those are held at private facilities, private camps, or also, you know, the local stable. And some of the things that parents might want to consider in choosing a camp that's specifically horsey would be like, are the lessons going to be group lessons or will they be private or small group? And then what kind of riding styles are offered, English or Western or driving or vaulting, any other equine activities that are going to be offered during the time that they're there. The other important question I think parents should ask is how much saddle time will my camper get? That was a constant question when I worked in the nonprofit sector, as well as my own private facility. Parents wanted to know how much time their child was going to actually be on the horse. And I think if you state that out front or let the parents know to ask that question, then nobody's disappointed. Because some parents feel like the only quality time around the horses is when their child is in the saddle. And we all know as equestrian folks, that is totally not true. And that there's so many other activities that take place or can take place in the camp environment that can support an improved seat or knowledge or theory, that sort of thing. So those would be some of the best questions to ask if they were going for a horsey camp.
You know what, Peggy, and that's so true. And that kind of brings us up to my next question is we have quite a few listeners that are instructors themselves and might have their own facility either on their property or they go to one. If they're thinking of setting up, say, a day camp for the summer and having the kids come for, you know, 5 days in a row, Monday through Friday for a half day or a full day, what are some specific activities, mounted or ground, that they could do with the kids that would be fun to get them started?
You know, I think one of the best times I ever had in my life was hosting those kinds of day camps that you just mentioned. And the reason for that is that we plan them using some of our teen riders as helpers. And so the way we kind of put it all together is we had this big committee meeting and everybody put their heads together about what the days would look like. And sometimes we had themes, you know, theme day and lessons and activities and all kinds of things where the teen riders could actually be coaches and they could do some of the ground lessons and activities that would be super helpful to support the mounted lessons. So I think for any riding instructor who wants to host a day camp, they should use resources that they have at their own facility to make it easier on themselves, number one. But the best thing about the riding instructor hosting a day camp is that it is a super great way to provide, you know, a fun educational service to their existing students. And it's also an awesome time to recruit new students. And I don't know about you guys, but when you teach regular riding lessons, you don't usually have a lot of extra time for your existing students to learn a lot about as much theory as you'd like or the how-tos or things that you can augment with other activities that you can do in camp. So try new things would be one of the biggest things I'd like to say. You know, if you want riders to have new experiences, that day camp environment is a perfect time to do it. You know, how often do you get to have them actually get off their horses and practice footfalls or play games on horseback when they think it's for fun, but it's actually learning more about balance and things that you might not have as much time in a regular hour lesson program. Also doing other horse-related activities during the camp. And I know, Christy, you probably know some ideas about some of the kinds of things that your boys like to do.
Yeah, that's very true. They actually, the very first experience that they had vaulting, as you mentioned earlier, was at a day camp that was put on where they did a little hour of, we have this pretty big half draft cross. Let's go ahead and put a vaulting surcingle and a pad up and let's everybody get on there and do all the basic maneuvers like the flag and the stand. And I'll tell you, when you let a 7, 8, 9-year-old boy get on a horse and stand on it, and then he learns how to do that at the trot, that's all he tells his friends at school. I stood on a horse
right.
that was galloping really fast, which isn't necessarily all true, but it makes them really excited, right? Something fun and different. Absolutely.
Yep. Another thing that's really great for those day camp programs is to have something at the end of the camp where the parents can actually come and see what you've been working on. Whether it's a little gymkhana or, you know, a little show that you do with ribbons, something where the riding students and the campers get to show off all the cool things that they have learned. And, you know, everybody will know this, but in Georgia, it's really, really hot. So you have to do the what we call Barbie horse day or pampered pony day, where the horses get, you know, all dolled up like they're going to the show and things like that. They really, really love it.
Yes. What do we call that? Hair time. Brush the mane, braid the mane, all that good
right.
stuff. Uh-huh. Absolutely. Well, Peggy, I think this is really, really good. Is there one overall thought that you want to leave listeners with in regards to either putting on that camp experience or attending one that you think is really key?
I think the most important thing is for parents to feel confident that they've made the right choice. Whether it's their child participates in a regular lesson program where they can be there and watch every time, or that they know they've done their homework before they send their child to an overnight or day camp involving horses. That's the number one thing. Ask questions. Be confident that your child is going to have an awesome experience before they ever get there.
And Peggy, if anybody has any more questions for you, what's a good way to reach you personally?
Oh, they can, I think the best way would probably be an email at patadams0929@icloud.com. I'd be happy to entertain questions.
That'd be wonderful. And folks, if you forget what that email is, if you go to chainstructors.com and go to our search, find an instructor, look up Peggy Adams, her email is there and you can get to her that way as well. Peggy, thank you so much for being on the show today. We really appreciate it. We think this is a very important topic, and it's great to have you on.
All right. Everybody have a great day.
Thanks, Peggy. You have a nice boss.
She is good. We just had our board meeting in Columbus, Ohio a few weeks ago, and she led us through a pretty intense strategic planning process that can sometimes be quite painful, but it was not. And then led us through we're having our 50th anniversary next year. So led us through what she called a brain sale, S-A-I-L, not you're going to sell your brain, but a brain sale.
I was going to say. Nobody'd want mine. It'd be free. It's just like, take it.
We'd have to pay you to give it to somebody,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So that was a wonderful experience to be able to kind of go through that. And sky's the limit. You know, don't think about budget. Just have ideas. And then we broke it down to, all right, now what's realistic? What should we actually put in the budget for next year? What are some good thoughts? So that was fun to do that type of work as a big group through our board.
Very good. Well, let's take a break for a song, and then we're going to come back and talk more about this topic with Amy Canterbury. She'll be on with us. We have much more show to come, so hang in there. And I thought a little Templeton Thompson, Believe in Me today. We'll be right back.
take right up on you. You don't know what to do, and you may not know which way to turn. Run, you can run to me. I'm always within reach, and I'll give you love like you.
Templeton Thompson with Believe in Me. You can find all of her music at templetonthompson.com. Hey, before we get to our guest, I have a funny first time. We posted on our Facebook page for everybody to tell us about their first time riding. And Rosie, I know she had told me this story before, one of our auditors, said, so for my first time, I was at, and I think this is Dominican Republic. So for my first time, I was at a wake, and I got on this donkey. To make a long story short, he ran off with me to go see a girlfriend, and the whole funeral procession, including my mother, ran after me screaming and swinging their veils. My mother never took me to a funeral again.
That's going to be hard to beat.
And you know what? You can just picture the whole scene, you know?
You can. I want a movie made of it. Runaway bride? No, runaway donkey.
Rosie has some colorful stories. She That's funny. All right. And by the way, Rosie did it's the year of the listener here at the Horse Radio Network. Over at Stable Scoop, we interview a different auditor and listener every week. And Rosie did one of those. So head over to stablescoop.com and you can hear her whole story. It's very funny. All right. We can get to Amy now.
Okay, super. Amy, it's so great to have Amy Canterbury on today. She has been teaching writing lessons for many, many years. She is one of our clinicians through CHA. She's done a lot of her teaching in camp settings. She's also taught at several private barns and at Wesleyan College in Georgia. She has taken students to compete at the national level in different disciplines and breeds as well. She's also active in 4-H as a club leader. And in her personal riding right now, she has actually competed in almost every discipline there is, except for endurance riding, is sounds like the only one at this point. She is currently working with her personal horse, who is a four-year-old appy named Felix, who she is preparing to show in Western dressage and in ranch classes. Hello, Amy. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are y'all?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks.
So we have two people from Georgia on today. So I am incredibly jealous of your fabulous weather. Go ahead and explain to our listeners, Amy, where exactly in Georgia you're located.
I am located on a mountain in the very far northwest corner of Georgia, just south of Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Oh, so you're near Tennessee too then?
Yes.
That's good. That means you can drive to our international conference in October because we're going to be in Murfreesboro and come and see us.
I'm so excited. It's less than 2 hours away from me. So
yay!
I will so be there.
Very good. All right. I love it when that works out. That'll be super. And for those that are listening, our international conference is open to everyone. It's October 20th through the 23rd this year at Middle Tennessee State University right outside of Nashville. So come one, come all. You can find out more about it on our website. So, Amy, when and where was your very first riding experience?
I think my very first riding experience was at a rent-a-horse trail ride place because I wanted to go to Girl Scout camp. And one of the questions on the horseback evaluation form was, have you ever ridden before? So that I could put yes, somehow I convinced my dad to take us down the road to the little trail riding place. And I never knew that my dad was terrified of horses, but he got on a horse and rode that day. And that's all I remember about my first experience.
Oh, but that's pretty good. That
well,
your dad
at least you weren't on
you.
A donkey in a funeral. I mean, that's something.
No,
right?
I wasn't on the donkey in a funeral. And I think the horse pretty much went where I wanted him to. So.
See, I think that's good. This reminds me, I'm gonna scatter off down a different path here for just a second. My dad's first riding experience with me, I was 18 and been riding for a while, and he goes to this rent-a-barn with me in Palm Springs. And it was one of those ones where it was a single track. You go out, you turn around, you come back. So they don't even make you have a guide. But they say it's a walk trot only. We don't want you running the horses. Here's what we're doing. And they asked you, how many hours have you been on a horse? Fascinating. So I already kind of had the plan. I go, if you say a lot of hours, you're going to get a horse you really don't want that never gets out much. So I'm going to go ahead and just say a few hours. I don't remember what I said, but it wasn't a whole lot. So I got a really nice mare. She kind of did whatever I wanted. So my dad's like, oh, you know, back in my military days, Black Fox Military Academy School, I rode a lot. I've ridden hundreds of hours. Of course, they didn't let him know that he hadn't ridden hundreds of hours for about 15 years. But that's okay. So they pull out Widowmaker from the back barn, who never gets ridden, who, you know, was fire breathing out his nostrils. And he jigged all the way to the end of this single track. And my poor dad was in so much pain. And then we turn around and what does this horse do? Oh, it bolts back to the barn. Of course it does. So my poor father, he stays on. I don't even know how. We get back to the barn and he's hand walking the horse. And I go, Dad, what are you doing? He goes, it said in the thing I signed that the horse couldn't come back hot. So I have to walk it out. So it was very entertaining. I'm sorry, Amy, but your comment totally reminded me of that story when you said you rode with your dad. I think that's great.
The way now we know why there are so few, where there are so few rent-a-horse barns anymore.
Which is too bad because some of those rental barns, I'll tell you, pretty good, some of them. And the ones that are good, you know, are still operating. And so that's good. But, oh, so funny. So, Amy, you've been so involved in camping and so involved in just riding lesson programs in general. Having heard, of course, the different things that Peggy has said, too, I would love to hear some, you know, specific examples or different kinds of things that you've personally gone through for how people can go about choosing an experience for their child that's a good one. What are some of your thoughts?
The first thing to realize is that there's two main types of horseback riding programs at camp. There's recreational and instructional. And recreational is similar to the rent-a-horse riding facility, except for that there are guides, instructors with you. So they go to the children go to the barn, get on the horse, and go on a trail ride with minimal instruction. You know, basically just enough instruction to tell them how to go on the trail ride safely. Whereas an instructional program, they may spend more time in an arena. They may spend time doing unmounted lessons. There may be more of a variety of what they do in the arena. So what your child does, you know, if they, what their interests are, kind of depends on which of those you should choose. If it's a first time experience, then maybe the recreational program is the right one. But if they're taking lessons, then they'll probably get bored very quickly with the recreational program.
And I'll tell you, though, as regards to the recreational program, I think it also depends on where the camp is, because, oh my gosh, some of the trails, and I'm going to brag a second, in my state here in Colorado are pretty amazing. And they're also pretty intense with the switchbacks and the up and down the hills. And so you get a little bit of a thrill, you know, as well.
Right. And if your child is traveling from one part of the country to the other, then seeing that new scenery, you know, will be very exciting, as opposed to if they were going on a single track trail ride, you know, that's 30 minutes long in their neighborhood.
Absolutely. So what are some specifics in regards to things like the horses, the tack, the specific arena equipment, trails, things like this that someone should look for before saying, yep, that's the place that I want my child to go?
Well, first of all, I would call the camp and, you know, ask the director about their horseback program. And if they mention things like their equestrian director has been around with them for many years, their staff grew up in the program, things like that, then that's a well-established program that has, you know, experienced instructors. So it doesn't tell you if they're good or not, but at least they have experience. You want the horses to appear to be well cared for, to be at a good weight, to look healthy, you know, just not, you don't want to go anywhere and see sick, skinny horses. And the same thing about the tack and equipment. You want it to be in good repair, to look nice, to not look like it was made in the 50s and falling apart. The arena fence is something that is very important. And unfortunately, some camps don't have the proper arena fence, but you want it to be made of a solid material, wood, metal, something like that. That's at least 3 feet tall. So some camps, unfortunately, ride in a pasture or a paddock that has wire fencing, which obviously, if a horse got upset and tried to run through the wire fencing, that could be bad. Or if you fell on top of the wire fencing, that could be bad as well.
Yes, I one time was at a barn that had a outdoor dressage arena, which of course has the really low rail, but they didn't have the nice little plastic rail. They actually had railroad ties. And that was a horrible situation, because if somebody fell off on that railroad tie, you can only imagine the injuries that could be sustained. So they pretty quickly were removing those railroad ties. So that's really good to look at arena fencing.
Right. And some arenas, like if your child is a more advanced rider going to a high level camp, then a dressage arena might be appropriate. But for beginner riders, you need to have the security of that fence to actually make an arena, because obviously, a horse can step over the railroad tie should they choose to.
Absolutely. And what do you think in regards to trails? What are some of the things that should be thought about in regards to that?
The trail should be appropriate to the level of the rider. So if you're a beginner rider, then maybe going on those steep trails in Colorado might not be the best experience. So you want, you know, them to be somewhat challenging, but not dangerous. So you want the terrain to be appropriate. You also want to make sure that they're maintained. No one likes to go on a trail ride where you're constantly ducking and dodging trees the whole time. And that they've been inspected routinely so that we know that there's not any washout, sinkholes, bees. That could be a bad thing on trails. So, you know, just that they're maintained and that they're appropriate to the level of the rider, I think, are probably the two most important things.
And I know there's a lot of day camps out there as well as overnight. What are your thoughts on how old a child should be or what experiences maybe they should have had before they try to do the overnight?
It's totally up to your child. I'm not sure that there is an appropriate age, but if your child is the one that is perfectly fine to go spend the night with friends, to go to the lock-in at the church or the Y, that they're perfectly fine being without you, then they'll probably be perfectly fine at spend the night camp too, because at spend the night camp, usually they get so exhausted during the day, by the time it's bedtime, they just want to go to sleep. Day camp, you know, if your child is not the person that likes to spend the night away from home, and the day camp is located close enough to you to make driving there reasonable, then that might be the best option. I think a lot of parents these days are more comfortable sending their children to day camp just because they can see them every day.
Yes, and that's what I love about it. There is that kind of transition for parents too, because I'll tell you, sometimes it's not the kid that's having the homesickness, it's the parent having their kid be away from them. And I had an experience last year that I didn't ask ahead of time. Are you noticing a theme here, Glenn? I'm just kind of not asking ahead of time on certain things.
Uh-huh.
My poor children, throw them to the wolves. But I put them up in camp for a week, and it was my first time away from them besides when I go on trips personally. So the house is very lonely. I'm like, huh. See, my husband's always here when I go on trips. So he's used to the house being lonely if I take the kids and we go to California to see my mother or whatever. But it was just me, and I was pretty lonely. And so I was like, oh, well, I'll call them. Oh, no, you can't call your child. Oh, I can't? No, you can just write them letters. Well, I hadn't written any letters ahead of time. So here I am midweek going, oh, my gosh, I got to write a letter. These poor kids are getting letters every day, and I'm the only mother not sending them a letter. So I write a letter, and Sean was so funny. I get there, and he goes, Mom, I got your letter yesterday. I'm like, well, at least you got it. He goes, yeah, all the other parents were sending one a day. Okay, sorry, hon. So this year I'll be better. I'll start writing the letters now for June. Not good.
And there are a lot of tips online about how to communicate with your child during camp. You know, maybe drop mail off when you drop your child off, or,
yes,
you know, does the camp accept email? So there's a lot of different options there too. But yes, a lot of times the parents are much more concerned about how their children will react. And like you said, the parents get child sick.
True. And the kids are like, oh, it was great. Actually, we had a great time. You know, we didn't think about home much at all. We were so busy. And I think that that's a really, really good point. So, Amy, we have quite a few listeners that are instructors themselves or equine professionals in some way. If they decided that they wanted to either go and work for a camp or they wanted to create one themselves, do you have some specific fun games or specific fun educational things that they could incorporate?
There are several books. 101 Arena Exercises is one book that comes to mind. And of course, nowadays with Pinterest, you can find so many different things on Pinterest. But keep in mind that all of the games, if your riders are competitive, then they have a tendency to get overwhelmed and get a little faster and maybe slightly out of control if they are a competitive type game. So that's always important to keep in mind. So you want to keep the game and the speed and the difficult level at a level that's appropriate to your riders.
Absolutely. And, you know, we were talking earlier that you don't have to always be in the saddle in order to learn and have fun, and that some of these day camp experiences are a really good example. Do you have some specific ground exercises that are useful?
Some of my most memorable experiences at camp happened not on a horse, but in the barn. So, you know, relay races of things that they've learned during the week about, maybe put a bridle together, tie a quick release knot, you know, push a wheelbarrow down the hall, you know, make up some kind of relay race of all the things that they've learned and kind of tie it all together. And those memories, I mean, even cleaning stalls when it's 90 degrees and you're dripping sweat turns out to be a positive memory in the long run.
Cause then hopefully you get to go and jump in the pool afterwards.
Exactly.
That's good. So now we're going to move away just for a second from camps and just talk about first experience in regards to a riding lesson program. What are your thoughts in regards to finding that good riding lesson program and how someone would go about that? And not necessarily just for kids, but for themselves as well.
Well, the best resource is to go to the CHA website and find an instructor. CHA instructors that are listed on the website are all certified. So that is a big starting point there. The other thing that you can do if there's not a CHA instructor in your area would be to ask for references from other horse people. Through social media is a great way to do that.
Definitely. And is there anything in particular about the lesson program that somebody should think about that might be different from the camp program, or is it pretty similar?
it totally depends on what your interests are. You want the instructor to be comfortable teaching the discipline, the seat and the discipline that you want to. You obviously wouldn't go to a instructor who teaches hunter jumpers if you wanted to learn how to barrel race. So you want to make sure that the instructor is comfortable teaching what you're interested in. With children, a lot of times, they don't know what they're interested in. They just want to ride horses. So finding an instructor who's really good with beginner riders is very important. And don't be afraid to move on to an instructor who specializes in the area that your child is interested in.
And now how about going back to our listeners that are the ones that are either currently professionals or the ones that are thinking about being. If you want to start a riding lesson program, either on your own property, if you have the facility or what have you, what are some thoughts for those beginner riding instructors to get them started, to get clients coming in, so on and so forth?
A lot of those tools can be found by going to a CHA instructor certification clinic. The risk management aspect of having a horseback riding lesson operation is very important. As we know, we live in a lawsuit-happy society these days, where if anyone gets hurt in the slightest bit, you may be paying for it for the rest of your life. So a lot of those information can be found through a CHA clinic. And if you want to do the best that you can to become a CHA site accredited facility, then that will help you a lot too. CHA has materials that gives you standards and tells you things exactly like how high the fence should be, how big the arena should be, how many students can ride at one time, and other great valuable tools like that.
So Amy, what is one thought that you want to leave listeners with today in regards to this topic of choosing a camp or riding lesson program?
When you choose the camp, make sure it's the right one for your child based on their ability and interest. Just because it looks good in pictures doesn't mean that it's the right one for your child. So really talk to your child and talk to the camp and find out which ones might be the best batch.
And Amy, if people want to come and find you and know more about what you do, what is the best way to do that for our listeners?
The easiest way is, like I said, go to the CHA website and find an instructor, and I'll be listed there.
Great. And it's Amy, A-I-M-E-E, not A-M-Y, for those that are looking for her on there. And Amy, thanks so much for being on the show today. We really appreciate it. And once again, I'm very jealous of your weather in Georgia as my snow keeps coming down.
Well, I will enjoy my 80-degree day, and I wish y'all the best of the rest of the week.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
I keep telling you, you got to move off the mountain. I keep telling you that.
And the funny thing is, I'm not in the mountains. I'm on the plains. It's like I live in Kansas. I'm very flat where I live, but we're still high.
Well, you're coming off the mountain tomorrow. You're heading to Lexington. It should be a little warmer there. So,
that is true. This is the rumor that I hear.
Well, if you can get out.
You know, I think so, because the snow's pretty light. They're just going to maybe be a little slower because of de-icing the plane. I'll tell you, the first time I sat in a plane when it was getting de-iced, I wondered really what was going on. I had no idea. I'm a Southern California girl, right? So I come to Denver to go to college, and I'm flying home at Christmas time, and they're going to de-ice the plane. And so we go into this little area at Denver International Airport, and this big truck comes on either side of us, two big trucks, and this pink liquid gel.
Yeah.
It's getting sprayed all over the airplane, and I'm on the window seat, and I'm watching it drip down, and I look at the guy next to me, and I go, what's happening? I had no idea. I'm like, why is pink gel coming on the airplane?
I remember the one time I was leaving out of Lexington, and I don't know what happened, but we got de-iced, and then for some reason, we couldn't take off. I forget what it was, and we ended up getting de-iced three times before we finally could take. We were like an hour and a half going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth to the de-icing station.
And I guess that's better than the alternative of getting ice on the wings and having an accident. But oh my goodness, it's a funny experience for those that have never had that before.
Yeah, it is interesting.
And if you're claustrophobic, you can't see out. So you're like, okay, I'm truly trapped now. This is wild.
And some airports have really big de-icing cannon gun things. And it's quite a sight to see.
Oh,
well,
wild.
Why don't you remind everybody where they can find the CHA?
Absolutely. So you can please visit us at chainstructors.com. You can also find us on Facebook, and you can also find us on YouTube with that same exact CHA Instructors label. And you'll find lots of good educational information if you're trying to start a riding program, become a riding instructor, find a camp or a stable near you, and all the different things that we spoke about today.
Very good. And don't forget to stop over to Horses in the Morning Facebook page and post about your first riding story. I have nothing here that I'm going to mention that beats the donkey and the funeral. So, I mean, I don't know.
The best part about that was the veils were flying. Yeah. I mean, that was so descriptive.
Well, you know what those funerals are like, too. It's like a parade through town, and they have the casket overhead. And it's quite an event. So I could just picture this whole thing. It's very funny. So, yeah. And then also head on over and like your Facebook page, right?
Yes, please. That would be great. And we have two different people that post on our Facebook page. Myself, that does all the boring stuff that gets like 5 likes. And then our social media expert, Susie, who lives in California, who posts all the fun stuff and gets thousands of likes. So go ahead and like her stuff and ignore mine, and it'll just be something I'm used to.
That's the way it works. Stupid stuff gets all the likes. That's the way it works. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. If you want to listen to past episodes of the the Certified Horsemanship Association show episode, then just go over to horsesinthemorning.com and search for Certified Horsemanship Association. I'm having trouble saying that today.
That's all right. CHA works too.
CHA works too. And you'll find all the past episodes over there. And of course, you can listen to us on the app, iOS or Android. You can take a listen over there to the recorded version of Horses in the Morning on Horse Radio Network app. Just search for Horse Radio Network in the App Store. And I did just get an email from our app guy, who is actively trying to figure out putting the live feed on our app, which we can do now. Talked to the people at the live feed company, and they said, yep, we should be able to accomplish that now. So he's working on that. So hopefully here in the next week or two, we'll have the updates go out to everybody's phones, and you'll be able to listen to all our live events right on the app. That would be great.
Glenn, we are getting so high tech.
I know. Now, to do that, you're going to have either, I would recommend, if you're going to listen to live feed on the app, that is a live feed. So you're going to have to be connected. You're going to have good cell signal or preferably a Wi-Fi connection through your phone. That way you're not paying for the data. So, that's something to keep in mind as you're listening to the live feed through an app like that.
You know, and that's a really good idea, because I'll tell you, I just recently bought my mother a cell phone, and she didn't realize that at her house they have this Wi-Fi thing going on, and I should have taught her that. So she was on mobile data roam for a really long time,
watching
and I got
Netflix
the bill.
Videos by the hundreds.
Oh, it was not good. And I went, Mom, no, you got to log on to Wi-Fi. What's Wi-Fi? Okay, so I had to teach her. So yeah, that was my fault. So thank you for educating, Glenn.
Yeah, that's one of the things, even with our app, if you're downloading the shows, a lot of people, you can have a choice with our app, with the Horse Radio Network app. You can stream it. And listen to it through streaming, which means you have to be connected, or you can download the shows and listen to them on the airplane or wherever, they're downloaded to your phone. Two things with that: make sure you delete the episodes off so they don't take up all the space in your phone, all the memory in your phone. And the second thing is, when you do the downloads, make sure you're on Wi-Fi while you're doing it to use less bandwidth. But that's probably the better way than even streaming, is because then you use a lot less bandwidth. Or if you are streaming, just make sure you're connected to Wi-Fi if you don't want to use up your, some people have unlimited, and then it doesn't matter as far as your data is concerned. We don't have unlimited. So it does, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and it does add up, so that's just
really
something to
tips.
Keep in mind.
Yeah, all really good.
And don't forget, when you get off the phone, I know you've already forgotten from the beginning of the show today, Christy, so hop on to your PC, whether it's a laptop or a desktop. If it's a Windows 7 or Windows 10, doesn't matter, or Windows 8, if you're one of the people who has that godforsaken system, just search for QuickTime, Apple's QuickTime. Just search for QuickTime on there. If it's on there, uninstall it.
Yes, I am on it. I wrote it down, so now it will get done.
Well, actually, I had a listener just send me a Facebook message and said, I didn't know that. I looked and it was there, so I uninstalled it. Now, there might be a couple things that don't work anymore when you go to websites, but it's better to be safe than be inconvenienced a little bit. And we'll be back tomorrow. Jamie will be here on Horses in the Morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. So be sure to join us then. We're looking for more really bad ads. Get your really bad ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. And this will be the last really bad ads this Friday for the month, because we'll be heading off to Rolex next week. Don't forget, our Bates Saddles Rolex coverage happens next week. And we'll be bringing two shows, Friday and Sunday, from Rolex, with all kinds of great guests. And Jamie and I and Jennifer will be together. That never happens. Once a year, I think, we get together. So that'll be our time this year to get together, is in Lexington, Kentucky. And you have a great trip there this week.
Thank you very much, Glenn. And one of these days, I'm going to be in the same state, place, and time as you all.
Have we
one
ever
of these
met
days
in person?
You know, I was wondering about that and thinking, not yet.
I don't think we have. So. I think we've always... We've been in the same town before, but I don't think we have ever met in person.
It'll happen.
We might have been at the same show before. I don't remember. It's been so long. But yeah. Well, it'd be good to meet you someday.
I know. That'll be good, huh?
Yeah. All right. Talk to you later. See
you, everybody.
All right.
Bye, Glenn.
Be safe.